Welcome to the Success Coaching Podcast. On today's episode, our guest, Sean Carpenter, shares his own personal journey to success. Because success is a journey, not a destination. Here's the hosts of the Success Coaching Podcast, Todd Foster, Alyssa Stanley, and Kelly Scar.
Everyone, and welcome to the Success Coaching Podcast. My name is Alyssa Stanley, and I am here with co-hosts Todd Foster and Kelly Scar. Today, we are sitting down with Sean Carpenter, whose business model revolves around building relationships, solving problems, all while having fun. He is a speaker, educator, and trainer, author of the award-winning blog called Carp's Corner. He's a coach, he's a realtor, and a huge influencer. Plus so much more that he's going to fill you in on during our session. So Sean, welcome.
Thanks, Alyssa, Kelly, and Todd. So good to be with you guys.
Yeah, right on, man. Thank you for agreeing to be on this crazy ride that we're currently on. So I appreciate you, appreciate your time. Why don't you give us, just start off a little bit of insight as to who you are, what you're about. I know Alyssa gave you a pretty good intro there, but if you could kind of fill in some of the gaps, that would be fantastic. And then we'll jump into the conversation.
Sure will. Born in Billings, Montana, ended up in Columbus, Ohio. After my father moved from Montana into the education field, taught at Cornell in Ithaca, New York for a couple of years. My younger brother was born there. Then we moved to Columbus, where my dad taught at Ohio State for many, many years, up until the day he died, actually. So grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and enjoyed a nice Midwestern lifestyle. Went to school at University of Florida, wanted a big school like Ohio State, but wanted it to be somewhere warm. So I picked the University of Florida, loved being in Gainesville, majored in exercise and sports science. Kind of my goal, guys, was I wanted to work front office of a sports team, wanted to work for the Yankees, the Red Sox, or the Cleveland Indians, or something like that. But after college, I got in the golf business, worked in the golf business for 3 years out of college. That started in outside of Tampa, then brought me up to Cleveland, Ohio, moved back to Columbus after being married and got a job in the beer business, worked for the Miller and Coors distributor here in town. And called on all parts of the city, but eventually landed at the Ohio State campus territory was my spot to sell beer. Now, as you can imagine, Alyssa, Kelly, and Todd, if you're ever going to sell beer, pick a spot where there's 45,000 students, and that's a really, really good spot to sell beer. But I, after a few years of doing that, I realized I was kind of more of an order taker than I was a salesman, and so I thought to myself, what would be a career that would allow me to drink beer and play golf? So I got into real estate, and I've been in that career ever since. I've been an agent. I've been a manager. I've been the director of education for the Coal Banker companies in Columbus and Cincinnati. And then about 5 years ago, I decided to retire from the corporate role, go back into being an independent contractor, kind of bet on myself and start selling again, as well as open up my own company called Sean Speaks, where I travel the country and talk to real estate audiences and other sales audiences about, as Alyssa said, building relationships, solving problems, and having fun.
What I love about this is that you golf, you can drink beer, and you do real estate. So as you said, you're a perfect candidate for being the most successful realtor out there. Were you a golfer at a young age, or how did you fall into the golf world?
Yeah, I grew up in a town called Upper Arlington, Ohio. That's why I still live there now. And Upper Arlington High School is where a guy named Jack Nicklaus went to high school. And we are the Upper Arlington Golden Bears. Interesting fact, Jack was named after the school, not the other way around. In fact, when he was a up and coming, young golfer, they would say, here comes that Golden Bear from Upper Arlington. And that's how he got his nickname, the Golden Bear. And he went on, obviously, to become the greatest golfer to ever live, arguably, depending on your generation. So I grew up caddying, Todd. I caddied at Scioto Country Club, where Jack Nicklaus learned how to play golf, and really got hooked on the game and started playing on a regular basis and played all through college. Didn't play at the collegiate level, but got good enough where I could get in the golf business. And so it's just been a ton of fun. And obviously when I travel the country to watch golf and to see some of the great golf courses around our country and around the world is always a treat.
That's awesome. So you went from golfing to then the beer business. Did something happen in your life where you said golf's done, or how did you accidentally fall into the beer business?
Yeah, I got out of the golf business because, as you can probably imagine, the golf business, you work a lot of weekends, you work every holiday, you work from sun up to sundown. It's a really challenging business, especially at the private club level, because you're really your only day off is Monday. when the clubs are usually closed. And so on Monday, you have to get your oil changed, get your dentist appointments, do your shopping. But you also want to play because it's really the only day that you can go out and play with your fellow pros and other club pros from around the area. And so it was just a challenging lifestyle, and to have a family, it wasn't super conducive at the time. And, you know, I also just didn't see myself doing it career-wise. So we moved back to Columbus. I waited tables and was in the food service business, and then kind of had the opportunity to learn about, you know, being in the beer distribution business, and got involved in that and just kind of really excelled at it. Loved the product, loved helping people at the grocery store level and the convenience store level, which was kind of more the order taking part. But then when I got into the Ohio State area, the work in the campus bars and getting to know the bar owners and the bartenders and the staff and doing the promotional things, it was just a lot of fun. That was kind of the first advent of the craft beer industry back then, when Coors, you know, invented this little beer called Blue Moon and Killian's Irish Red, if you remember, back in the day. And so I was really one of the first people to kind of understand the intricacies of the different craft beer styles. And so the company used me to go in and talk to the restaurants and the bars about why they should put our beers on tap. And, you know, so it was just something I just really enjoyed. And, you know, the aspect of working for an industry that's been around literally for hundreds and hundreds of years, that was kind of fun. And the story that each beer tries to tell, you know, and what we see now, you guys, with the advent of the local craft beers exploding around the North America, you know, when I travel the country now, Todd, it's fun to go into the local craft breweries because each of them has such a cool story to tell about the product and their community. And so that's something I really enjoy.
With the beer industry, the way it's so competitive, I could see where real estate and beer sales go hand in hand. Did you find that the same thing where, you know, I mean, we have Budweiser, we have Coors, we have the craft beers, and then we have other real estate companies out there as well. At that time, did they teach you how to close, or did you have to really learn how to close them yourself, or did the product sell itself for you?
Well, the package part of it was literally just going into the local convenience stores or the grocery stores and kind of, you know, hitting a quota, so to speak. We got to sell this many Coors Light 12-pack bottles. We got to sell this many Miller Lite cases. And then building the displays, you guys probably think, you know, you guys don't think of it much as a consumer, but you see it when I mention it at the end caps in the grocery stores, there'd be the big Coors Light, you know, case displays, and there'd be the themed with the Super Bowls or the Stanley Cups or whatever it was. And so there was that part of it, but then there was the, you know, how do we get our beers on tap? And really what it came down to, guys, was the relationship, because a lot of people would just put whatever beers on tap, you know, Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors Light, they put all the same beers on tap with different colored tap handles. And hey, what if we put this beer on tap and got your waitresses and wait staff to tell a story? It's kind of like when you order a salad, even though we know what they're going to say, we say, what kind of dressing do you have? And they say ranch, blue cheese, Italian, Thousand Island. I'll take the ranch. And so having that other thing, that other piece of the story, Todd, to sell was I thought always cool, to not just give the same thing that every other restaurant or bar had on tap, have that one extra thing. And then obviously closing and telling them, look, this beer at this price, you know, per pint or per pitcher could make a lot more money than, you know, this beer at this price per pitcher.
So what was it, Sean, that pushed you towards real estate then? I mean, you know, beer and real estate, they may go hand in hand for, you know, realtors, beer, golf, and real estate. But, you know, for people listening to this podcast, it's like one end of the spectrum kind of to the other, right?
Yeah, you know, Kelly, it was a conversation that I had with my wife early on the morning of November 1st, which would have been what, 1997. Let me backtrack a little bit. I was good at beer sales. I loved what I did. I spent a ton of time waking up early and doing the carryouts and then staying out late, meeting the bar owners and the, you know, the restaurant owners. Cause you know, most of them don't show up till 3 or 4 o'clock, especially around the campus bar. So I was out doing a lot of things, but I came home after a Halloween night promotion at one of our new restaurants near Ohio State campus. And I got home about 3 o'clock in the morning. Maybe if I remember right, I took out the staff, you know, after the bars closed down, we went out to a breakfast and, you know, I rolled home and I came in the house quietly like I usually did, you know, so I didn't wake my wife up, and she was sitting up watching TV about 3:34 in the morning. And I thought, what's wrong? You can't sleep. And she says, no, I'm fine. Just go look on the kitchen table. And I walked on the kitchen table and I thought I was going to see divorce papers. I really did. I didn't know what to yeah. think. And she had taken one of those big desk calendars and she had circled all the days of October that I was out past midnight. And there was 26 days out of 31 that I was out past midnight.
Wow.
And I quickly got defensive and I was like, yo, this is my job and this is what I'm supposed to do. And she said, look, you're good at it. You love what you do. But if we want to have a family, you can't be out past midnight 26 out of 31 days. And so we slept on it. We had a conversation and I said, what do you think I should do? And she said, well, why don't you call Bonnie? Bonnie was the agent that helped us buy our first house a year ago at that time. And she says, I think you'd be great at real estate. So that day I called up Bonnie. We did. We'd had a great time searching for a house. And I said, hey, Bonnie, do you think I'd be good in real estate? And Bonnie said, oh my gosh, Sean, with your personality and your stuff, you know, your energy and your knowledge of the city, I think you'd be great at it. And that's kind of where it started, Kelly. It started out of finding another career opportunity that would fit my skills that I could, you know, find a passion for, but also that would allow us to start a family.
If your wife wouldn't have, I guess, had that sit down with you that night, which we've all had as husbands, especially at 3:30 in the morning, do you think you'd still be in the beer sales or do you think you'd have fizzled out of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I like to think, you know, that I would have been doing something. I love the, you know, looking back, I didn't really have my philosophy of build relationships, solve problems and have fun until I was in real estate, but I would have probably been doing something with people, Todd. I don't know though. You look at the evolution of the beer business. I mean, I might've been a rep for a brand. I might've got into the distilling business or, you know, the brewing business. I don't know. Cause you know, out of college, I was a golf pro for 3 years. Then I was in beer sales for 3 years. Then I sold for three and a half years. Then I became an assistant manager for a couple of years. Then I became a manager for a couple of years. So it kind of became my evolution of finding that new Sean Carpenter 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. So I don't know. I've always been engaged in the product, so to speak, but not in the business, so to speak.
So I want to back up for just a second because you said something that really resonated with me. I can think back. It actually kind of triggered me just a little bit. And that was, you know, your wife had the calendar out, circled 26 days on the calendar out of 31, and you immediately got defensive. I can picture myself multiple times where my wife is like, you know, you've got to put some boundaries around your life. Like you can't just put the kids to bed, open up your laptop and go back to work. You can't just finish at the dinner table, go and sit down on the couch or sit down at your desk in the office and open up your laptop and go back to work. Like what was it? I mean, she obviously didn't have divorce papers and I understand, you know, her saying that she, you know, wants to have a family. But what was it that kind of that trigger point for you that kind of snapped you out of this and you actually were able to sit down and say, yeah, God, like this life is insane. I need to make some changes here. And on top of that, has that happened to you since? Has there been other instances where this has actually happened?
Well, I think probably at the time I sat down, and I looked at all the work I was doing in the beer business, the hours and hours upon hours I was putting in. And then really at the end of the day, looking at, you know, what I was making back then, and granted, this was, you know, 24 years ago, but you know, to think I was probably only making like $35,000 a year, you know, and that became kind of one of those things like, gosh, if I'm putting in this much effort into it, what if I was putting in that much effort to something that I owned that was my business? And that's when I kind of learned about real estate. Cause to be honest with you guys, I didn't know anything about the real estate industry, even as a buyer of the house. You know, we called up my mom and dad and said, hey, we want to buy a house. You know, what do we do? And thinking back, it's funny because my dad, you know, he said, well, call Bob Kidwell. And I said, who's Bob Kidwell? And my dad said, he was our realtor when we bought this house in 1971. And it's that power of, wow. I mean, you know, it's not like Bob Kidwell hung out at us and I didn't know who Bob Kidwell was, but so that's how we got into it. So I think, Kelly, it was the opportunity to make something more out of my life and kind of start a career instead of a job. If that's, you know, I know it might be cliche to say that, but it became a career versus just a job that I was doing. Has it reoccurred? Probably a lot, because I think a lot of what we do is real estate is who we are. It's part of, you know, I'm a dad 24/7. I'm a real estate agent 24/7. I'm a husband 24/7. I'm a Florida Gator fan 24/7. I'm a beer drinker, not 24/7, but I, you know what I'm saying? Like my brand is part of who I am. And so I think part of what we do in this business, as opposed to someone who, let's say, works at Walmart or a department store, they get to punch out at 3:30 on a Friday afternoon and they don't have to think about stocking shelves until Monday morning at 9:00. when we punch out of our office or our home office, we're still a real estate agent. When we take our family out to dinner and we talk to the wait staff or we see one of our former clients, you know, at that restaurant, we're going to have engagement with them because we have relationships with them. And it just reinforces that we're in the relationship business, right? The house just happens to be the widget that we use in real estate. And so I don't think we turn that off, Kelly, but I think there are some boundaries that we need to set where we, you know, to be honest with you, I think life balance is kind of a BS word because balance implies an equal time spent on each side of the fulcrum, so to speak. And I think I heard Jeff Bezos say it first, and other people have said it, but I like to think of a work-life harmony. And so I really feel like where I'm at now, certainly when the kids were growing up, the harmony had to be different. I had to spend more time at home doing homework and bathing the kids and being there for feeding time and things like that. Now that the kids are older and self-sustaining, you know, I can be down here in my home office getting work done in the morning. I can stay out late. And if the harmony's good, I mean, Todd and Kelly, you guys have all had those times where you have a great day at work and you bring that energy home to your family, right? And when the other time you have a great weekend with the family and you bring that energy to your office in the daytime. So I think Kelly and Todd, if we can find that harmony of balance of life and work, that's where I really aim for. And so long answer to your question, Kelly, is sure, I've had lots of those times where I feel like, do I really need to be doing this right now? Or can I go upstairs and just turn on a football game and not have my phone in my hand? Can I go pick up a book and not check text messages in between every chapter?
Yeah, 100%. I love that answer. And I was actually, my follow-up to that was going to be, can you coach me out of this, right? Like putting your coach's hat on, but I think you kind of nailed it in some aspects, talking about, you know, how work-life balance is bullshit and, you know, this harmony that could exist. You know, how do you, I guess the question then would become, how would you find that? You know, if you're at a point right now in your business and your relationship at home where your partner is, you know, constantly on you about putting your phone down and putting the laptop away and not bringing your work home and all of that kind of stuff, how do you then institute some sort of, and you're self-aware enough to realize that this is affecting your relationship? How does one then put a boundary into place and say, okay, well, I need to put this down? And, you know, considering the fact that we're all entrepreneurs, that we're all working for ourselves, that, you know, if we don't actually get out and do the thing, the money doesn't hit our bank account, right? So how do you balance that out, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the myth that sometimes people feel like they have to spend quality time with their family, so to speak, but then they also have to balance out the all the work we do earning an income is usually going to be fed back into where we live and how we live and the lifestyle we choose and where our kids go to school and the car we drive and the clothes we wear, right? We have this belief boundary. And so understanding that the work we put in is also for our family. But I think something I've been using a lot with the agents that I work with on the coaching side is that you guys have probably heard of the Eisenhower matrix, right? And maybe you've talked about it in previous episodes, right? That urgent and important, not urgent, not important. And I think in our business, because most people in the real estate industry, most, not all, but most people are people, right? We like to help people. We like, we're that high I, you know, personality where we want people to like us. And that means we don't say no to people because we don't want them to not like us. And so we elevate a lot of things from our customer standpoint into that urgent and important matrix. A lot of our clients put everything into that urgent and important, but really, you know, like you can imagine, Kelly, like you get a text message from a client and they say, Kelly, I need you to call me ASAP. And you're thinking like, oh my gosh, something must be wrong. I got to stop what I'm doing and call them back. And then they say, hey, what time was the inspector coming over tomorrow? And you say to yourself, that was not ASAP. That was not an ASAP issue. So catching yourself, coaching, you know, kind of managing yourself, Kelly, to say, all right, is this urgent and important? Can this get done today? Does this call need to be returned immediately within the hour or by the end of the business day? Can I do this tonight when the kids go to bed, right? After I've had some quality time, a glass of wine with my spouse or partner, you know, like once again, just kind of prioritizing the tasks that we have on our, either our written to-do list or on our mental to-do list, I think is a skill that we all can get better at, putting a priority on things and not prioritizing everything as A1.
Yeah, I think the power of no is incredibly, incredibly, like being able to say no to things is incredibly powerful for some people. I remember Jesse Itzler. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast here a while back, and Joe Rogan had asked him a question about, you know, how he's able to run, you know, multi-million dollar businesses. He's married to a wife that owns a multi-billion dollar business, Spanx. You know, he just basically asked him, like, how are you able to spend a bunch of time with your family yet run all of these multi-million dollar companies? And the big answer that he has was, I just learned how to say no. Like it's these people calling him up and saying, hey, I want to take you out for lunch and spend 15 minutes picking your brain. And he's like, no, like what is the cost benefit analysis here? Like, how does this benefit me in any way, shape or form? Right. It's the got a sec meetings. So, you know, somebody opens your door and says, hey, do you got a sec? And you know damn well that isn't going to last a second. It's going to last 15 minutes to an hour. Right. So right. So what is it that I'm actually going to get out of that? So the power of no, I think, is something that you kind of touched on there that I think a lot of people could probably take away and implement right away and all of a sudden just have this massive impact on their lives just by setting that one boundary.
You know, Kelly, I want to give it credit because I think it was Derek Sivers who started CD Baby, and he's an author. And I believe I was listening to him on an interview podcast with Tim Ferriss. And Derek's a very busy guy, entrepreneur, and doing lots of things. And Tim's big on, you know, minimizing your distractions. And he asked Derek, he said, how do you say no? And Derek, I believe, once again, I want to give him credit if he's got said it, but he said, as soon as he started implementing this rule, when someone asked him to do something, if it wasn't a hell yes, then it immediately became a no. If he didn't say to himself internally, hell yes, I want to do that, then he knew that it had to be a no. And so you think about that, guys, in your business. You know, there's a lot of things we say yes to, but not a lot that we say, hell yes, like I'm going to drop what I'm doing to do this, or I'm going to put it on my calendar. You know, I love that quote that says, I like friends who will consult their calendar to spend time with you, but I like better friends who don't even have to consult their calendar to spend time with you, right? It's not a matter of what I can do. And so that hell yes fulcrum is pretty powerful.
I like to piggyback on the hell yes thing. So as let's say you're a brand new agent or you're an agent or any small business out there that's starting off and you're hungry, right? Everything you do is dependent on what you do that day and the next day and what you did before. How do you get over the hell yes? Because in the beginning, I believe everyone's going, hell yes, I'll take this, I'll do this, I'll do that. And for all of us that have been in real estate, you know, I mean, you've been in it for 25 years or so. I've been in it for 20. Kelly's been in it for 86 years. We have the option to now say hell yes to certain things. At what point or what advice would you give someone to be able to, I guess, really figure out when is the real time and the right time to say hell yes or even hell no?
I think you probably have to earn the hell part. I think you don't know what a hell yes is until you've had a whole lot of, oh shit, I made the wrong decision with this one right here. Right. So it's funny because when new agents ask me best piece of advice I can give them, you know what I tell them? Make more mistakes. So many new agents are afraid of making any mistakes because these people that teach pre-licensing classes tell them that anything they do, they're going to get sued. If they breathe wrong from a client, they're going to get sued. You know, we go so far over the spectrum of, you know, client protections, and I'm all for it. But I basically say, if it's not lethal or illegal, try it, do it, make mistakes. Cause I don't know what the wrong script is until I've said the wrong script. I don't know what the bad objection handling technique is until I've said it wrong. And so I think you need to earn that hell part of the hell yes, Todd, because what I like about the business might not be what you like about the business, right? What Kelly likes or you know, his milieu might be FSBOs and expireds. Mine's fear of influence. You know, what's your target and how do you know? So I saw Kelly maybe nod his head when I said that, but I think you don't know what the hell part is until you've had a lot of yeses, but more importantly, a lot of no's.
That whole thing just kind of, it brought up a memory for me. I like back when I first got started. So it hasn't been 86 years, Todd. It's like, I'm in my 15th year. I'm still a baby compared to you guys, but still, you know, it was like 07, 08 is when I got licensed. And I think it was like 2008. I picked the wrong mentor. And that was one of the mistakes that I learned early on is, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people. But I picked the wrong mentor. And, you know, one of the things that this guy had said was, well, you know, I don't do open houses anymore. I don't have to do open houses. I don't need to do open houses. I'm just not going to do them anymore. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have to do open houses either. And it's like, hold on a second. I don't know anybody in this city. Like, how the hell am I going to build a business if I'm not doing open houses? Right. That's got to be one of my lead pillars. Like, it was just. That whole thing, it was like my hell yes was very different because I was like, hell yes, I don't have to do. I'm just not going to do open houses. Right. It wasn't the power of no, it wasn't it. My hell yes was just something very, very different. And I agree with you in terms of making those mistakes. That was one of the mistakes that I made early on. And you don't earn the right to have that power of no. I think when you're early in the business, you got to do anything and everything that you possibly can in order to make sure that you're going to be able to get past that rate of attrition, which is typically about 18 to 24 months. So if you can move through that and actually make money and you're still in the business after 5 years, maybe then you've actually earned that power of no and that ability to be able to say hell yes.
I have a question about the 24/7 then. So if you are hungry and you haven't earned the hell yet, how do you balance or imbalance or have no balance or keeping, I guess, yourself consistent to not working 24/7, not being a 7-Eleven? Because you, at least in the beginning, unless I'm wrong and my perception's wrong, everything we hear in the beginning, we will be saying hell yes to most of those things.
Yeah. A quote that I share with a lot of new agents is, live your life and let real estate happen in the cracks. I think we see a lot of people who try to live real estate and fit their life in the cracks. And that doesn't really work for me. And I think it doesn't work for most people. People that try and live real estate and fit their life in the cracks usually end up failing at both. But when you're super active in your kid's school or your church or your local charities, or you hang out at your local country club a lot, or right, where do you get a lot of your business from? From your kids' schools, in your churches and your charities and your country club and things like that. So I think learning that you don't need to be, you will be a real estate agent 24/7, but you don't have to be. I don't have to talk about real estate every time I'm in front of somebody. I just need to be ready to talk about real estate when I'm in front of somebody, right? There's that fine line between being pushy and desperate and being knowledgeable and helpful. My friend Jim Stevenson said, it used to be find me, sell me. Now it's know me, help me. And when we can make that paradigm shift, you guys, I think that is powerful, that it's about, you know, sales is not about doing something to somebody. It's about doing something for somebody and listening for opportunities. And so I think it's a lot of at bats. It's a lot of hitting range balls, you know, and anyone, I don't care how good you are on the golf course, anyone can hit a range ball and hit the driving range. But when you're on the first tee, and you got to get it around the corner and the pond and the bunkers are over there, it takes a different level of skill. But you better be at the driving range a lot. You better be, you know, doing a lot of batting practice before you become Tony Gwynn or someone like that, right? Tony Gwynn, like Kelly, you said, you know, I don't do open houses. You know, I mean, can you imagine someone like mentoring underneath, you know, a great baseball player like a Mike Trout or a Tony Gwynn, you know, back in the day? And, you know, I mean, Tony Gwynn could look at that guy and say, like, I don't swing at curveballs. That doesn't mean he doesn't swing at curveballs. He doesn't swing at bad curveballs. He doesn't swing at curveballs when he wasn't expecting a curveball, right? And so it's all about, I don't do open houses because I don't have to, but I did when I, you know, when I was younger.
Speaking of curveballs, a curveball could be a mistake for us in life. Could you tell us one of your biggest mistakes you ever made and how you overcame it?
Probably not leaving and going on my own sooner. Right. I think that's something that everybody in our business, a lot of times people say, I can't afford a buyer's agent or I don't need a buyer's agent. And then when they get a buyer's agent, they say, I wish I would have got a buyer's agent sooner or an admin. So just probably those evolutions, Todd, of, you know, the betting on myself. And I just kept saying to myself, gosh, every single person who's successful in life took a chance on themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, you look at the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs and the Wozniaks and the guys that, you know, and the Dave Ramseys, they, you know, you hear all the legendary stories of how they built their business in a garage, how they left and, you know, came to the country penniless and succeeded. And so it's that, but that's so hard because it's, you're not just betting on yourself. You're betting yourself on your family and your name and your brand. And so that's probably one that comes to mind, but like a lot of, I joke, you know, why new agents have flat foreheads? Cause they say to them, cause when someone asks them what they say, that's what I should have said. Like 2 days later, they remember what they should have said. So the answer to the question, what's my biggest mistake? I'll probably think of six of them, you know, after we hang up, but it's that reminder that, you know, I bet on yourself and it's probably one of the best bets you're ever going to make because you got to believe, you got to kind of go all in. And guess what? We have to do that every day in our business. We have to do that every day in life is kind of go all in. Because if you hedge your bets, you know, you're almost never going to go all in.
If you're enjoying this episode, please rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the Success Coaching Podcast.
What are you seeing out there right now, you know, in the real estate space, Sean? You're traveling around the country. You know, you're talking to a lot of agents right now. Are you seeing I don't really want to get into markets, but I want to get into kind of what you're seeing in terms of, you know, companies and models and all that kind of stuff. And I'm curious as to what, you know, people are thinking out there, what they're saying, what they're feeling. You know, there's definitely a shift. It seems to be happening, you know, moving towards the cloud. And, you know, it started kind of with Realogy and Remax and, you know, these companies going public and that sort of thing. What are you seeing? What's kind of the word on the street as so to speak, as to, you know, what are people talking about in the real estate space right now? What kind of trends are you seeing that are starting to emerge?
Well, I think some of the big ones obviously are, you know, like you said, using the cloud, leveraging technology to become a better agent. Listen, old school still works. This is good news for anyone out there who's, you know, 50 plus age and they think all these young whippersnappers are going to come in and steal our business using their Twitters and their iPhones. Old school still works, right? The belly to belly handshake, eye to eye relationship still works. Does new school work? Heck yes. There's a lot of agents and companies that are killing it on the technology side. And I think the blending, guys, of that old school relationship, leveraging it with technology is going to continue to be the path forward, right? Somebody with a technology tool necessarily can't take my relationship away, but they could start building a better relationship through time. So I think technology is a big one. I think we're seeing clearly a shift to teams, right? And think of that what you will, whether that's mega teams or big teams or partnerships, I think is maybe a better word for it. Cause you don't have to be a team to be successful. I think we're seeing that it reinforced what we're seeing across not just real estate, but probably a lot of businesses is there's different options out there for different people. And the menu of services, you know, Cheesecake Factory, I don't know if you have that up in Canada, Kelly, but Cheesecake Factory has a menu that's literally like 12 pages long. And Chipotle has seven things on their menu. And they're both super busy, right? And so what is the key, though, is you've got to know your menu. What is your offering, right? I know it's kind of cliche to say, what's your unique selling proposition, but what's your story? Because here's what I find. If you have a good story to tell and other people tell it for you, then you don't have to tell it as much. Think about that. If I have a great story to tell and other people like to tell it, then I can spend my time, effort, money on the people who tell my story, not on telling it to strangers. So the other thing I'm seeing is people, a lot of people are asking me, you know, do I feel the market slowing down right now in the States? Do I feel it slowing down? And my answer might be yes, but here's my metaphor, you guys. For the last 6 months, the real estate market's been going 110 miles an hour. And about a month ago, the real estate market came up over a hill and saw a cop in the middle of the road. And so the real estate market slammed on the brakes and slowed down to 90. We're still going 90 miles an hour, but it feels a little slower because it's not 110. But if we took ourselves from 2016 or 2018 and looked at ourselves from the outside, we'd say, holy crap, look how fast they're going. Look at the breakneck pace of this business right now. And that's where it comes down to slowing it down, having those one-on-one, face-to-face conversations, those buyer counseling sessions, those listing presentations that are all based around asking questions, getting more information, listening to the answers from our customers and clients and communities, and then finding ways to answer those questions and or solve those problems and or, you know, satisfy the needs of our clients.
If you were a fortune teller and had a crystal ball, do you see real estate the same as it is, let's say 3 to 5 years from now, in terms of we are still going 90, or do you see us getting pulled over, having a conversation, creating a relationship with a police officer, and having us go on our little own way, maybe just a little slower than we were in the past?
I think you're going to see both. I think you're going to see people that are going to stay on the freeway and try and go as fast as possible and push it, push it, push it. And I see other people that says, you know what? I don't need that lifestyle. I get a little nervous. I get white knuckles and I feel nervous inside. I'm going to take some side streets. And then you're going to see some other people that says, you know, I'm going to find a way to sit in the back seat and have someone else drive me. I still want to go places. I just don't want to be the one in charge, right? And that's people maybe joining teams or partnering up with organizations. So I think there's probably the metaphor there of there's different paths for other people, right? The same thing, the music business, right? People say, oh, do you think rock and roll's dead? I don't know. Rock and roll's just changing. I think there's still, you know, there's hip hop and there's country and there's alternative and there's grunge and there's all these different flavors. You know, one of my favorite presentations I do is called Getting in Tune with Your Audience, What Real Estate Rock Stars Can Learn from Real Rock Stars. And I love a quote from the late Glenn Frey from the Eagles. He said, you know, when I was younger in the business, I used to think other bands making good records could keep us off the charts. And then I realized that other bands making good records can't keep me off the charts. Other people getting listings can't keep me from getting a listing. And so I think the answer, Todd, is which road do you want to take? Which road, you know, do you want to stay in the fast lane? Do you want to find a way to make a faster car? Or do you want to take the side streets and enjoy the pace more? Do you want to take a, you know, a lot of different ways to get from here to California? I could take the fastest freeway. I can go on Waze and they'll say, here's the fastest way. Or I can say, well, let's go down Route 66 and let's stop and enjoy the trip and see people along the way. So I guess the answer to your question, I think, is there's lots of different ways that I see that the industry going. It depends on who the driver is. I use lots of metaphors and or analogies in my teachings. Because I just think there's, you know, I need people to, sometimes people hear it different ways.
Well, let's talk about that. What pulled you towards, you know, you're successful in real estate. You had a successful beer selling business. You moved into real estate selling, helping, you know, people buy and sell real estate. And then, you know, what was it that pulled you towards managing and teaching and coaching and training? Like what, I mean, clearly, you know, you're not going to be doing that sort of thing in the beer business. You know, that they probably were doing that as a pro, I'm assuming as a club pro. Is that kind of where that came from, Sean, or where did that whole thing come from?
I can tell you now where it came from. Back then, I think the opportunity to become, I was teaching in the beer business. I was teaching them about the products and I was teaching them about the flavors and the pricing and things like that. But in the real estate business, having the opportunity, we had had our first child and I was given the opportunity to become an assistant manager, which meant I still got to sell. My number one job was to sell, but I got to help the manager with coaching and with training classes and talking to recruits and things like that. And then I was given the opportunity to become a branch manager, which meant I stopped selling. We were non-selling managers at the time. And so I made the decision, gosh, do I want to stop selling? But the trade-off was I got a paycheck. I got benefits. I was a new dad. To have that consistent pay was a nice thing. In the 2 years I managed, I really loved the coaching and training part of it, but I hated the managing part of it, Kelly. And so I was given the opportunity to become the director of education. What I learned when I became a branch manager, even though I stopped selling, i.e. working with buyers and sellers, guess what? I had to sell every day. I had to sell my agents on why they should show up for training classes. I had to sell my agents on why to show up for sales meetings. I had to sell recruits on why to get in the real estate business and then why to join our company and why to join my office. So I got to sell every day. I think we all get to sell every day, right? We sell our kids on the books they read and the people they hang out with. We sell our spouse on, you know, why I'm going to play golf this weekend or stay out late tonight. So I really love the coaching and training part of it. Knowing what I know now though, Kelly, it's funny. My father, as I said, was a professor of landscape architecture for 29 years. He was great at what he did. He was president of the American Society of Landscape Architects, which would be like us being president of the National Association of Realtors or, you know, the Canadian Association of Realtors. I mean, he was at the peak of his industry. His father, my grandfather, I called him Pop. My Pop was a traveling shoe salesman for Clarks of England and Florsheim Shoes. And he was the classic, you know, old salesman, the big Cadillac, the samples in his trunk. And I remember he lived in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, which is in Jacksonville on the beach. He had beachfront property. And me and my two brothers would go down and stay with him like one at a time. We got to go down and spend a couple 10 days or 2 weeks with Pop and swim in the ocean and play on the beach. And I remember one time I was down there, Pop had to call on some clients in Miami. And so he said, we're going to go down to Miami for a couple of days and you're going to see what your Pop does for business. And he said, if you're going to call on customers, you got to have a little suit. So he took me to the store and he bought a little suit. I think I was 7 years old, maybe 8 years old. And he bought me a suit with a little clip on tie. And my job, Kelly and Todd, I had to bring the samples into the stores. And I didn't realize it then, but knowing now, when we would drive to Miami and we would stop at this diner or this hotel or this shoe store, he knew every employee's name. He knew every employee's spouse's name, kids' names, hobbies and interests. He knew every waitress along the path. He knew every hotel clerk. He knew their names. And he was just absolutely the consummate relationship-driven salesperson. And I never wanted to do what my pop did. I never wanted to be a teacher like my dad did. And here I am after their death, and I teach people how to be salespeople. I get to honor their legacy, so to speak, in what I do every day. So the long answer, Kelly, is that's where it came from. It was inside me. I got to live that. And now that they're both gone, I hope that they're looking down on me and say, like, we're pretty proud of the fact that he gets to teach people every day how to be salespeople.
Please tell me you still drive a 1973 Caddy around.
I don't, but man, every time I see a big Cadillac, man, I think of my pop, and I just think of like that big boat of a car. You know, I mean, you know, you picture you're a 7 year old kid and you're sitting in the back seat and you literally felt like you were 7 feet away from the driver. You know, it was, but you know, he was just, I mean, he was old school, right? And it was a, you know, handshake and I told you I was going to get this for you and I'm going to call my company and we're going to get that for you. And then my dad, you know, like I said, I never really kind of paid attention to what he did, but the day of his funeral, when my brothers elected me to give the eulogy, and I stood up on that altar at the church. And, you know, when you're in the funeral party, you're the front row. You know, and you don't really see everybody filling in the church. And when I stood up and walked up and looked out on the congregation and every single seat was taken and the church was lined in the back of the church with his students from over the years that had come back to kind of pay respects to him. It's kind of cool when you think how many professors you'd go back to their town to honor. And at that receiving line after the funeral, you know, shaking the hands of these students, and they said, you know what? Your dad was the hardest son of a bitch I ever had as a teacher, but he made me the great landscape architect I am today. And that's why I drove through the night to be at his funeral, you know? And so that's kind of cool. That's kind of that legacy that, you know, that a lot of people talk about. Like at the end of the day, that's what, you know, your resume is going to be what it is. All of our resumes will be done, you know, how much money we made and our jobs and what we did, but the relationships and the legacies is kind of what I really like about what we do.
What would your legacy be? You're off, people at your funeral, they're telling the truth about how great you are, not lying about how great you were. What type of legacy are you looking to leave on this world once you're gone?
Well, you know, my philosophy, my slogan, you know, build relationships, solve problems and have fun. I think that could be my tombstone, right? He built relationships, he solved problems, and he sure as hell had fun. It'd probably be that. It'd probably be that, you know, Kelly, you know, you and I have talked for years, you know, go back to our, you know, days with Michael McClure and the things, you know, we did with that, you know, when people meet me in person, Todd, at an event like the Michigan Realtors event, and they say, man, Sean, I've been following you for years on social and you're the same person in real life as you are online. You're the same person offline as you are online. I think that's a cool thing. So when, you know, that can be part of my legacy is that I was genuine, you know, he was a smart ass through and through. He was a loyal person through and through. He was a sports watching, beer drinking, laughing person, right? I mean, that's my target audience, guys. It's beer drinking sports fans with a good sense of humor. I mean, I'll work with you if you're a wine drinking, non-sports watching person that doesn't laugh. We're just not going to have near as much fun as a beer drinking sports fan with a good sense of humor. And here's the key. You know what beer drinking and sports fans with a good sense of humor hang out with? Other beer drinking sports fans with good sense of humor. It's finding that ideal client, you know, in what you do. So The answer, Todd, is I want people to tell, to say that he built relationships, he solved problems, and he had fun.
With the career you have now, you are definitely doing that. Do you see yourself doing that long term, or do you see yourself, holy cow, Sean, it's time to hit the brakes and slow down and just enjoy life at a leisurely pace?
For the time being, I think I'm on a pretty good road. I work hard. I work a lot of hours. I mean, I sell real estate. I speak 50 plus times, you know, a year. I just got off a 12 city, 11 state, 5 week tour, kind of, you know, where I was just event to event. And people are like, are you ever home? And I go, yeah, I got to go home and change my luggage and get new clothes and things like that. But my family, you know, when I made that decision, Todd, to jump back into sales and leave a corporate America and leave a paycheck and leave benefits, I asked my wife and kids, hey, do you think that I could do this? Do you think, would you guys support this? And they're like, that's what you love to do. Heck yeah, do it. Does it help that they're all grown? You know, my son is a sophomore in college. My daughter's graduated, and you know, they know this is what I like to do. And so I don't see any reason why I couldn't continue to do this. Keep telling a good story, helping other people learn how to tell their stories. There's something special, guys, about being a teacher at heart. And when your students, whether that's a classroom student or a professional taking your classes or attending your classes, you know, send you that note, text message of a message on social media that says like, hey, I still do that thing you taught me to do, or I still build the relationships and solve problems and have fun. And that's kind of a neat thing. So I guess, no, I'll keep doing it until nobody wants to listen, I guess. It may be at different levels. It may not be speaking around the country, but you look at some of the great speakers of our generation. You look at the Lou Holtzes and the Zig Ziglars, and you know, they kind of were telling stories and encouraging people till the day they died.
I'm guessing that if my wife would have sat down and said, hey, you were gone 26 nights out of October, and that was pre-COVID, and after COVID, I believe my family would be saying, why aren't you gone 26 nights a month?
Yeah. Yeah. It's neat and it's fun and it's, you know, but it's not for everybody. I mean, my wife traveled with me I spoke at the Georgia Realtor Conference, which was in Destin, Florida. And obviously I was booked 4 or 5 months ahead. And she said, oh, I'll go on that trip with you. Cause she really doesn't travel with me when I go. And so she thought Destin, Florida, I'll go sit by the pool. Well, it so happened that conference was at the tail end of Hurricane Ida. So it was raining and cold and, you know, the flights home were a little bit delayed. And she thought, man, chasing planes and living in hotel rooms is just not for me. But I love it, man. It's the stories I get to meet. I did some math the other day, guys. I've in the last 10 years of my life, 2.5 years of those 10 years have been in a Marriott property, in a Marriott hotel. They're my family on the road. Right. But I try and get to know the stories of the people, you know, that work the hotels and the bars and the restaurants and the airports and things like that. And if I can use those stories in my blogs, you know, I call it being blog worthy. If I can catch somebody being what I deem as blog worthy, writing a blog about them, telling their story to my audience so that my audience can learn about some little thing that a shuttle bus driver or a hostess or a wait staff did. Because I think if we all do that, if Kelly and Todd and me and Alyssa, if we watch for other people in our communities doing something worth talking about, then we start doing things worth talking about ourselves. We start seeing what's that thing that's just a little bit better than the next. And I think I can do that for a long time.
You've proven that when you feel important and you just feel good when you're doing business with someone such as Marriott, and they make you feel special, right? They give you an upgraded status card. You are a member who can walk in and get a room if needed. There's many things to it. Yeah, that's how business is. Any person out there running a business, either in real estate or a pizza shop or any small business, needs to understand that you must make everyone feel special, because if not, Hilton and Holiday Inn's right around the corner.
Seth Godin years ago in, you know, probably 96, I want to say, he said, there's four kinds of people in the world. There's prospects, there's customers, there's former customers, and there's loyal customers. What are we trying to get? Right. And then Seth writes a lot of books. And so later on, he said, you know, the key to success in sales is turn strangers into friends and then turn friends into customers. If you can figure out a way to do that. But then Seth is a smart guy. He keeps thinking. And what I love about what he says now, he says, That still works. Turn strangers into friends, turn friends into customers. But then the most important thing we need to do, Todd and Kelly, is turn those customers into salespeople. Get those customers to talk on a podcast about the Marriott. Get those customers to talk about, you know, Coors Light or Southwest Airlines. Get those customers to tell your story. And so that's, yes, you're right. It's about creating that loyal customer. Because for the most part, everyone who's listening to this, every person in the world is a prospect until they become a customer. And then hopefully they become a loyal customer and not just a former customer. And in real estate, like, we have an opportunity to get that repeat and referral business. Because you're right, Todd. Every city I go to that has a Marriott probably has a Hilton property or a Holiday Inn or something cheaper or something a little farther away. Every place that has Coke has Pepsi for the most part, like convenience stores and things like that. So what's going to make someone reach in that cooler and grab a loyal drink? When you order a Diet Coke and the waitress says, "We have Pepsi, is that okay?" And you say, "No, thanks, I'll have a water." Right? How do you create that person in your business that is a true card-carrying member?
And I think it's important to remember that although we desire to have perfection in life, not everything's perfect. I mean, I've had many issues on the road with hotel chains. And the thing is, we'll go back because they either took care of it, or we know it was a mistake and it probably won't happen again. Or they somehow made us feel special and important by saying, "Okay, Sean, here, Todd, here, Kelly, here's what we're gonna do for your next visit." And so it shows you that you don't have to have perfection in business. As long as you have the relationship and they are raving fans who are talking about you for free, which is basically you're getting free advertising, it's okay to make mistakes. Just don't make them over and over and over again.
Sure. And that's where the loyalty comes in, right? That's where the that incident that went wrong was an isolated incident. It was outside of this person who was behind the desk's control. But if every time I go in, no matter who's back there, that's when you start making this changes, right? I mean, we've all had restaurants that we like to frequent. And one time we go and the food wasn't as good. The fries were cold. The service wasn't good. And you don't say, "Oh, the whole place sucks." You go back a second time and a third time and a fourth time and the fries are cold and the service sucks. You start saying, like, "Eh, they're slipping." And then you stop going. But the isolated incident, and that's a good lesson for us as salespeople, is we can have a day where it wasn't as good as it was before. And we should know that. We should be able to self-monitor that. But how do we handle it? How do we make it up? How do we earn that trust of our customers? I love talking about trust because in our business and real estate, I mean, whether you're a new agent or experienced agent, trust is, I think, the key tool in our toolbox. And there's three C's that lead to trust, right? There's competence. Are you good at what you do? Do you know your shit, right? I mean, people trust you if you know your product, you know your service, you know. The second C is confidence. When people listen to you, can they hear your confidence? Can they see your confidence? I think people can feel confidence. And the third C, which I think is the epitome of trust, and that's consistency. Can I consistently deliver competence with confidence? Can I consistently show up? And that's where I'll trust a brand if their overall consistency is good. If they have one glitch, but then it's consistently repaired or fixed or apologized for, then we can do that. And so the newest people listening to this and the most experienced people, if you focus on those three C's of trust in whatever it is you do, whatever service you provide or product you have or company you run, if you can be competent, right? That's a function of action, right? That's a function of ability. If you can be confident, that's a function of attitude. And if you can be consistent, that's a function of action, man, you're going to be trusted today, tomorrow, next week. And if you can earn people's trust, they'll tell other people about you.
Could there be a fourth C that could be communication?
Sure. Let's add that one in there. I think, yes, somehow, once again, telling the story of how you're confident, competent, and consistent. And sometimes that story could be told, or it could be, you know, in print, it could be on video, it could be on your social channels, it could be word of mouth. Super powerful.
All right. So, Sean, you've mentioned, making people blog worthy or finding people that are blog worthy or experiences that are blog worthy. Maybe you could just let us know where your blog is and how long you've had it and, you know, the type of content that you're posting up there.
Yeah. So I love the blog. Has given me opportunities to kind of document my journey. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't blog. It's for me, it's a place that I can keep my thoughts and find an audience. I blog at carpscorner.net. You can get there by seancarpenter.com as well, but carpscorner.net. And I've been blogging there for, I think I started blogging in about 2002 or 2003. And so I've got over 1,100 blog posts now written. And you know what, guys? People that don't blog, people that don't do videos, people that don't do podcasts, you become a better writer when you start writing. I'm a much better writer than I was when I started. But my audience is real estate agents, brokers, managers, mortgage people, anyone who's in sales, anyone who wants to learn about building relationships, solving problems, and having fun. And by using that as my sort of my target audience, a lot of my blogs aren't about real estate. It's about being a dad. It's about traveling. It's about lessons I've learned. Of the 1,100 plus blog posts, I bet if I went through and looked at them, guys, though, only about 100, probably less than 100, have been truly about one person, a blog worthy story, a story worth telling. And I think of those, let's just say I'll just get 75. 74 of them were about someone doing something awesome. And I think only one time have I gone the negative route and said, this was a bad, bad experience. And I told the story almost as a lesson to say, but then I changed. I didn't like that. I said, I'd rather tell good stories about that. And so it's fun for me. The consistency has been powerful. I started years ago, guys, writing what I call the Monday morning match. It was designed as a post that was going to be a story, a quote, a video, something to inspire your week, to kind of light that fuel under your week and get you started, the Monday morning match. And by doing that, it forces me on Sunday nights to make sure that I write a blog post that shows up in your mailboxes on Monday morning. And that consistency, I've missed one Monday in, I think, 9 years. So that's been a great exercise to kind of tell my story. And it allows me to find new readers, people that hear me speak and they want to continue to hear my story. They can follow my blog. Sometimes people follow my blog because their manager or their board of realtors shared a post or they saw it on social, and it's gotten me business because then people say, we've been following your blog, we want you to come speak at our conference and things like that. So it's just cool for me to kind of have my, you know, I haven't written a book. I don't have a physical book that I could hold up and show you, but I have 1,100 chapters of a book. If I just go through and pull out my greatest hits, in fact, I've thought about doing that, you know, getting maybe some of my best blogs and calling it a book of matches, right? And pulling out my best Monday morning matches and pulling out just my blog worthy individual stories. And I love it. It's just something fun for me. Like you guys enjoy and you know, love doing the podcast. And it's years from now when I'm dead and gone, it'll be out there. My friend says blog stands for better listing on Google.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Part of your legacy. So if I'm the you know, director of an association looking to hire you to speak, where do I find you?
Yeah, you can go to seancarpenter.com or carpscorner.net, and there's kind of an about me page. I love talking to obviously real estate audiences. I've had a chance to speak to some non-real estate organizations, which is fun because I think the message of building relationships and solving problems and having fun goes across borders. I speak to some local high schools and talk about leadership and goal setting. So they can reach out to me. You can, Kelly, as you know, I'm super active on social. Because I don't think there's any better way to build relationships, solve problems, and have fun to an audience further and faster and freer than I can on Facebook and Instagram and my favorite channel, Twitter, at Sean Karp on Twitter and Instagram. I love the fast-paced variety of the stream on Twitter. Twitter's that cocktail party that rolls by really quickly. Instagram is the slideshow in your living room, and Facebook's that backyard barbecue where the stories are different. But finding me on social, connect me on my blog, follow my blog. And you know, if you got a real estate event or an audience that as small as a leadership team or a top agent event or a kickoff event, I'm already starting to book into 2022. So it's something I just love getting in front of my audience. As we talked about, Todd, in the green room, you know, sharing that passion. And look, Zoom was great. It allowed us to get in front of people and help tell a story and entertain and engage and educate people. But there's nothing better than that energy you get from a live studio audience. You know, you see that with a Garth Brooks or a Bruce Springsteen or any band that, you know, they feed off their audience, and they'll play longer if their audience is giving them the energy they need back.
I'd like to go back to that one Monday that you missed. I mean, you had a streak there, and it's been 9 years, and you missed that one Monday. Uh-huh. And what I love about that is that, first of all, you remember that Monday. And more than likely, you also had the guilt of not doing something that you'd committed yourself to doing. In business, I believe also people should have that guilt. They should be in such a pattern that they're doing things that when they skip a day or miss a day, because life gets in the way, you still think about that day. So can we go back to that Monday that you did miss? Exactly why did you miss that Monday?
I got to think back, but I think that Sunday night, I just, nothing was in my head. I couldn't get anything out. And I thought, you know what? It's okay to skip one. I'm human. No one's going to care. No one's going to miss it. And then that Monday afternoon, I got about 6 or 7 messages from people saying, hey, did I get taken off your list? Did I, you know, and it was one of those things that if you do something that people will miss it, if they don't get it, then it's something worth doing. And I also just felt like I missed it. I felt like, you know what? But here's the thing. I just started another streak, right? I just started again. I remember a story, Jerry Seinfeld, the great comedian. He was talking about writing jokes and how do you write so many jokes as a comedian? He says, your job as a comedian is just to write jokes every day. If you can write one good joke a day. And so he just put a wall calendar up and he put a red X every day he wrote a joke. And any day he didn't write a joke, there was no X. And so he had to start another streak. He had to start another streak. And so it's one more phone call. It's one more podcast. It's one more joke. I like to share the story of trick or treat, right? Remember when you went trick or treating, you know, on Halloween night, and remember that first time you went out without your parents with you, you and your buddies were going to go out and you were going to crush the town. You were going to fill your pumpkin. Now you were going to fill your pillowcase with so much candy that you were going to go out literally until they kicked you out. Right. And you went to a door, lights were on, you rang the bell and nobody answered the door. What'd you do as a kid? You went to the next house. Because you were out to get candy. You didn't sit on the porch and think, oh my God, I must be wearing the wrong costume. Oh my God, I must have rung the doorbell the wrong way. Oh my God, I must be at the wrong time. You just said, screw it, let's go to the next house. Because that's where the candy was. But for some reason, guys, we become adults. And when someone says no to us, when someone says no thanks, I'm not interested, it's not for me, we think it's about us. We think it's about the company we're with or the product we have or the way we set it, instead of, no, it's just about them and their needs right now. And I got to keep knocking on doors. So go to the next house, the next house, the next house. That's where the candy is. And that's where I think that I didn't write the blog that day. So I wrote the blog the next week. And now I tried to do one on Thursdays. I call it my 30 for Thursday. It's 30 words or less in a blog post. And I got to tell you, man, writing 30 words is so much harder than writing 300 words.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to find the exact right words. And I can't tell you how many times in my head, this is what I'm going to write. And I write, and I'm like, 36. How can I go through and say the same thing with 6 less words? And man, you become a better writer when you write something that's 30 words and not 300. So that's called my 30 for Thursday. And it's just more of an exercise for me. I missed a couple more of those because sometimes I just can't get it out. But the Monday mornings I haven't missed. Like I said, if I went back and looked, it's got to be 5 years that I haven't missed a Monday.
The lightning round.
All right. So we've got this little thing that we do with, I think probably most of our guests. It's just a lightning round, rapid fire questions. The idea, Sean, is, you know, just kind of off the top of your head and, you know, we'll go for there.
Sounds good.
Okay. Here we go. Summer or winter?
Summer.
Yeah, because you're a golfer, right?
Yep.
Okay. When are you at your most productive?
Early in the morning. Get up and do my 4-H club every morning. Yep.
There you go. Who is your inspiration and a quick why?
Probably my dad and my pop that I talked about earlier. And just once again, the lessons that they taught me. And as you become more mature, you realize that the lessons that they teach you when they're gone are probably more impactful than the lessons that they taught you when they were here.
Awesome. When you were in school, what was your worst subject?
School.
That's a good answer. I like that. What's your favorite cake flavor?
Chocolate.
All right. And last one, what scares you?
Snakes. Snakes and heights. So my worst fear would be cleaning my gutters and finding a snake in my gutters. Yeah. That would be the worst.
Likewise for me.
That's awesome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Success Coaching Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please follow or subscribe to the Success Coaching Podcast at your favorite podcast provider. For special access to past recordings, videos of past episodes, and more, please become a Success Coaching Podcast companion at successcoachingpodcast.com.